Hey, it's Ron Jacobs for Endpoint TV, and today I'm delighted to be joined by Jesus and Dwight. And you guys are from, what's the company name?
It's called Talago.
Talago?
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. And so you guys have built some very interesting thing here that we're going to talk about today. It's called SOWare.
Oh, come on.
Oh, no. SOWare.
You're from Fresno.
Okay, SOWare, right? Yes. Okay, so what is this? Let's lay a little groundwork. What is Talago? What do you guys do? Tell me that.
So we're an application development firm and consultancy firm. And so we work with a lot of Fortune 500 companies implementing mostly Microsoft technologies, doing a lot of consulting and app the firm. You know, a lot of, you know, very large enterprise solutions. And we're delighted that today we launch our software, our sister company that is going to be a software brand, and is a company that is launching software, and it's called Talago Studios.
Ah, okay. So you guys have been out working with customers and kind of see common problems they have. And you know they're out there trying to implement services with WCF, and you're helping them. So you say, "Wow, this is a problem. Everybody has this problem."
Right.
So you go off to fix it. So tell me about SOWare. What is it? What is it for? What does it do?
Well, we've gone to we've implemented many solutions for many clients, and one of the common key tones that we hear from different clients are things like, where do we find the services that we've built? You know, how do we discover them? How do we locate them? Mm-hmm. And, you'll hear things like, how do we version this particular service? Because one particular service supports a certain set of features, but now we have a new requirement that's just come down from upper management, and they need us to do this, and how do we add this on to the existing service without breaking other clients that are communicating with the service, right? So when you think about versioning of services and you think about how to discover and locate them, you know, there's not too many tools that exist out there that allow you to do that such a thing. So that's some of the things that SOWare can do for us. Right. You can register these services, and you can version these services, and you can basically take the configurations of these services and store them in a central repository. And that's one of the key themes of SOWare, is to have a central repository for web services that exist in your
enterprise. Okay. So this is something that, you know, we're as Microsoft, we build WCF, we build workflow services and things, and we go, hey, this is great. Look how easy it is to build something. Good luck with that. And then people go off and build something, and then they run into this whole set of issues that we're really not helping very much with, right? Like you mentioned that discovery and all this kind of stuff, right?
Well, WCF particularly is such a powerful technology. I mean, when we start learning, you go out and speak at conference, pray the WCF gospel, and then when you go to the real world to implement this on large enterprises, you realize that the technology is really solid. It's probably better than anything else on the market nowadays, but it's very hard to manage. So things that you don't consider, like, yeah, everything is configuration, but how do you manage the configuration file?
Or
it's very easy to build service, but how do you test them? Or how do you monitor them? And, you know, how do you catalog and organize your different services? And that's a problem that everybody has, and unfortunately, there is no good tooling for it, and the alternative on the market are, you know, J2EE platforms that really they don't do a good job managing WCF services.
Okay, so before, you know, this is a web video, right? So some people are watching this for, and they go, "Oh, great, they're going to try to sell me a product. Click, I'm going to go look at something else." Yeah. Now, before they do that, you're actually going to make this available to people for free, so they can at least some version of it, right? So they can use it and learn it and that kind of thing. Tell me about that.
So we planned, since the beginning, we planned the launch of Talago Studio, and conceptually, Talago Studio has to be a community-driven company. So we're all at Talago. We have some people that we consider our thought leaders in the community. So a lot of people that serve as advisors to different Microsoft product teams that do a lot of speaking, writing. So we believe in the power of community to either make a software successful or a failure. So when we launched SOWare, we decided to make a full feature complete version available to the community so they can try it. It has a limit on the number of services that you can use, but if you're within that threshold, you can even go to production with it, and we're not gonna charge you for it. There is a commercial version, and it's a fully supported pro, but we really want to engage the community. And for the last 2-3 weeks to a month, you were part of those demos. We have been demoing to very influential people in the community, some of the top CFXers in the world,
right,
to validate some of the concepts that we were putting together.
Okay. And so how many services can I do before I run into the limit?
I think it's 7 is what you can do.
Okay. Yeah. But that's pretty reasonable. Yeah. So the point is that you can get this, you can try it out, you can put it up to enough services where you can really begin to sense if there's value or not. And if you decide, hey, there's no value in this, or I don't want to use it, fine. You know, you didn't lose anything.
That's
right?
The idea, and we plan to benefit from that, like the feedback and the suggestions that we get from customers and partners. I mean, we plan to include it in the next release of the product.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. So that's awesome. I love to highlight these sorts of things because, you know, look, it's my job to say, go build services, go, you know, enjoy WCF, but but let's deal with the pain of the whole thing. So I'm glad you guys are helping out here. All right, so you're going to show us this tool. Let's see it in action.
So the first thing I think Dwight was referring to this, so we're in at a high level concept, is a service repository.
Okay.
So it's compared to a traditional, comparable to a traditional UDDI registries, you know, which you can catalog services and organize. So that's our main function. You can organize your different services, endpoints, bindings, behaviors, all the WCF artifacts into categories, and you know, discover the different versions and all those things.
Now, so, in fact, this one of the things I thought was different about your tool, as opposed to kind of a, there's a lot of people who have sort of UDDI-based registries,
right,
is that your tool is a little bit more oriented towards WCF, so it has notions of managing, like you mentioned, the bindings and things like that, that maybe other tools that are more general purpose didn't have.
Right, we focus a lot on the WCF specifics to make it a lot easier for, number one, configuration. Because one of the things we've heard at a lot of clients is that it's kind of hard to keep the various different services configured correctly, you know, because if they have, you know, different security settings for one service versus another service, the question became, well, how do we, you know, manage and keep those configurations correct and valid for service A versus service B? So we decided to create this repository in such a way that we can, you know, centralize with WCF in mind, with behaviors, with bindings, and everything that WCF can do. We wanted to make configuration simple and easy.
Okay. And so correct me if I'm wrong, though, but I'm just giving my impressions of what I've seen so far. Now, but that's not to say that this tool is useful only for WCF services,
no, absolutely,
right?
You
can do other kinds too.
So we can manage, actually we have examples of, you know, J2EE services and services built on our platforms. However, we do believe that we excel on the WCF side.
Okay.
Particularly because if we try to manage everything, you have to put certain level of abstraction.
Yeah.
And when you put that level of abstraction, you're not going to be able to manage things that are important and key to the WCF platform, like bindings, behaviors, the configuration files, and ultimately the people on the operations team that are managing WCF solutions. They have to deal with that. They have to know that their 50 services are using certain security model or the, you know, certain connection strain on the config file change or certain behavior change from one place to the other or the endpoint of the service change. Mm. And that's a fact. That's reality. They have to manage those things. So that level of abstraction of we can do everything, it really doesn't help them.
Okay, so I'm sorry, I've already interrupted you too much. Let's go. Let's keep seeing this.
So before we go here, an important aspect, a point you brought up before was that you know, how is this different from the traditional UDDI-centric registries? We decided on purpose to stay away from UDDI. Mm-hmm. We believe UDDI was, you know, it wasn't very successful, you know, in terms of trying to serve as a standard for discovering services. It was too complex. So the core of SOAware is completely based on RESTful services. Specifically, it's completely based on all data. So every single concept that we have on this repository, this is by design. Every test, every binding, every service, every behavior, every monitoring artifact could be accessed using an HTTP GET, could be modified using an HTTP PUT, could be created using an HTTP POST, and everything is all database.
As a matter of fact, we decided not to really publish this until we can get results from a browser. Right, so you can actually type it in the URL and actually get the results from a browser. So if you wanted to see a registered service, you could type it in right inside the URL and see the information. Because it's OData, it's just simply an Atom feed, right?
So
we can just see what that Atom feed looks like right there, right inside the browser.
Awesome. Okay.
So what we have here is a simple catalog of services. SOLARWARE, in a nutshell, we support three types of services. We support SOAP services, traditional, you know, being described on a whistle. We support RESTful services, and we also support OData services. The reason for that distinction between OData and SOAP, it is because we can, in the case of OData services, we can resolve metadata to an extent that we cannot do with RESTful services.
Right.
In a pure RESTful way, there is no metadata.
Exactly.
However, OData extend that with a metadata schema that describes the navigation trees and all that, the resources are being exposed. And we use that to facilitate things like discovery, testing, monitoring. So we have a specific category for that.
Cool.
So what I'm going to the entire example that we're going to demo has the three type of services. We have three SOAP services. We have a specific RESTful service that kind of simulates a CRM system, and we have an OData service. Let me show you a little bit how the experience of creating a new service on SOLARWARE is. For us, a service is only a name, a description, and a namespace. So suppose that I want to create something like sample service. You can say this is a channel 9 service, namespace. And here on the messaging style, you need to tell us what you're going to do. If it's SOAP, RESTful, or OData, and that helps us guide the rest of the configuration process. Suppose that I want to do SOAP. And the first part that we offer here is the ability to categorize what you're doing. You can add categories, organize the categories in certain hierarchies that help you find the information. You can see here some of the categories that we already have created. So I'm going to create a new one called samples.
So that's really more like tags than really.
Experience is more like tags. It's really categories.
Okay.
So let me access my SOAP service here and copy the whistle and go back here. First thing we need to do to deploy a SOAP service is create a new service version, and this is how we address versioning. Everything in SOLARWARE is a service version. You can associate different versions with a service. So you can declare the version number, 1.0. I'm going to paste a whistle.
So here you have the option of either putting in the link to the WSDL as what Jesus just did, or actually if you had the complete WSDL in a file somewhere or on your network, you can actually paste it in that WSDL text box there.
And I'm not going to walk through entire UI, but there are a couple of things that are worth highlighting here. The configuration category field, it helped us. This was based on a client request. It helped us to model different environments. So the same service could be deployed in QA, dev, production.
All right.
So here you could say, hey, this is my dev environment. The is alive setting is something that we implemented in the case you need to find out if your services are working properly.
Uh-huh.
So the way it works, because this is a show for developers, is from the UI you can ping a service.
Yeah.
And say, hey, is this guy working properly? And what we do is we have an operation invoker that intercepts a message right before it gets to the service.
Okay.
But it never invokes a service. So we know the service is working, but we don't have to execute any business logic.
Okay.
And we've returned back the response. So you can indicate that on the if you're interested in that feature. And the tracking profile is for monitoring. You can configure the different levels of monitoring that you want for your service. I'm not going to do any of that because we have that already configured with our services. I just created my version. And here's an interesting concept. Everything is OData, right?
Right.
So I'm just browsing the whistle from the repository. When we deploy a service, we make all the artifacts of that whistle, schemas, messages, operation, available through OData feed.
Okay.
And one of the things we do is we replace all the schemas all the imports and includes in the WSDL with the equivalent OData feed. If you're looking at this, right. It's an OData syntax.
Yeah.
So you can copy this, paste it on a browser, and you're freely accessing our repository, doing an OData query and retrieving the schemas.
Cool. Okay.
So another thing, where do we go from here? Another thing that we can do with services is to model dependencies.
Mm-hmm.
And this was another feature that was based on a client request. I have multiple services on my enterprise, and I have services that are calling other services, other services. How do I know if I'm going to change something? What's going to get affected?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So we built this dependency graph that allows you to declare dependencies between services. So I could say that service I just created depends on this other service and pick the specific version that is dependent on it.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And when we save it, we generate the dependency graph
okay.
for that specific service.
Oh, so that service depended on yet other services?
As we're seeing here, this service depends on the CRM service that depends on this or two services that are calling the OData service. And we can navigate through the hierarchy by the different versions. If I look at the dependencies of the CRM sub-service, it's a subset of that graph.
Right, okay. So, that's beautiful.
So once and in the same way we created service, you can remove them if you're not intended to use them anymore. So it's very simple to do. Now, RESTful, a particular case here that I think software kind of excels at is the use of OData services. With OData services, we resolve. It's the same idea, right? The service is a name and a description. We believe it's important to support OData because Microsoft is really putting a lot of effort behind OData.
Yeah.
You have more and more products like SharePoint, Reporting Services, Power Pivot, embracing OData nowadays. So it was a natural fit for us, and software is completely based on OData. Mm-hmm. So in the same way we did with the SOAP service, you have the meta. You can access the metadata for that OData service.
Right.
And an interesting thing, you can model dependencies, and an interesting thing we released with the Pro was a hosted version of the OData Explorer in SOAR. So you can play and browse your services and see how the add-on fit looks like.
Cool.
And apply all the filter commands and any other special operations that you want to apply that OData supports.
Well, like you said, I think OData is a really important technology going forward.
Absolutely.
And most of the traditional web service repositories or management tools, they're made only for SOAP services, so they wouldn't have any understanding of this. So
exactly.
That's a fantastic feature.
I have a good friend here in Redmond that is kind of working on all, on the OData stack. And the way he puts it is that they're intending for OData to become the new ODBC, which is like a great analogy from some point.
Absolutely. And you can imagine a lot of people, as they start deploying these services, they'll realize, wow, our existing systems for managing services just can't deal with this. What do you do with a UDDI repository in this? You could probably make it work, but it's not going to be great.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You'll have to tweak a lot of things.
Yeah.
Just putting it nicely.
Absolutely, yeah.
So another interesting thing here is a concept of how do we manage, we show you how do we manage services. So mm-hmm. What about the RDoPCF artifacts? What about bindings, behaviors? So as you can see here from the main UI, you can get to the different bindings.
Okay.
So we ship software with all the default bindings, and
right.
There are more, like the most common binding configuration. So if you don't know how to do dual certificate authentication, you're going to find a binding in software that does that for you. If you don't know how to do username or certificate or federations or those things that are hard to do.
Right.
And hard to figure out, or how to interoperate with IBM WebSphere is... Mm-hmm. What are the bindings that work? What are the ones that doesn't? We have all that already pre-configured.
And the best thing about this is, let's say that you have a set of services that share the same type of bindings.
Yeah.
That, for example, they're kind of hard to configure. You can actually create a new binding type and store it in here for use of later purposes for future services that need to follow that same pattern or same template.
And that's really nice because, what happens today is, you get some poor new developer and he's like, Fred, I don't know how to create that binding. And they go, oh, call so-and-so. I think they worked on a project exactly. that did this. And, you know, they're trying to find copies of old web config files yep. and stuff like that.
So why is that important? When you deploy a service on software, the experience of configuring it is as simple as select the behavior you want to select.
Yeah.
Here, look at your different endpoints and select your binding, your behavior configuration. If it's already saved in software, you can just configure it here. And we have a mechanism to synchronize it and configure the service on the fly that we're going to show you in a minute.
Ah, sweet.
Now, in terms of we manage bindings and behaviors in a way in which you can take the section of the configuration file, come and save it on software. Mm-hmm. However, this is another feature that was based on a client request. We're realizing that as we develop more and more WebCF solutions, we've run into a lot of bindings and behaviors that are almost identical, but they differ in, you know, one value, like the message size or the right. certificate value. And people, they just don't know how to configure credentials or how to configure since like metadata or service throttling. It's hard, and you have certain people that has a good level of expertise with WebCF, but it's hard in a large organization to assume that all your developers are going to have that level of expertise.
Right.
So we created this concept, this templating engine for bindings and behaviors that allows you to declare a section of XML and to mark the different areas that you think developers have to configure. So if you don't know how to assign credentials or how to enable metadata or how to do service throttling, you can just pick that template and we generate the UI for you to tell us, hey, this is a certificate I'm going to use and this is the store, or here's, I do want to enable metadata, and we generate the configuration for you.
Nice.
So you don't have to figure out how the XML looked like.
Oh, excellent.
So the idea is for a copy-paste scenario, right?
Right.
You see it all the time where junior developers come along and they are trying to get something done, and they go to a setting or a configuration setting or behavior that has a set of values. They copy and paste the section, paste it into their new service section, and something blows up, right? Because, oh, I forgot to copy the end tag or whatever the case may have been. So this is a way to alleviate that pain and that problem, right? We can provide these templates that allow you to set certain values, default values, which Jesus will be showing you in a minute. And you can override those default values with new values if you want. And so that's kind of where this came from. Was that?
Well, I mean, this stuff, nobody can keep all this in their head. I mean, exactly. I do the copy-paste thing. That's what
absolutely. Everybody does.
I go like, oh, I can't remember how I did that. And I look for some old project, and I go, oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep. It's really hard when you enable... WebCF is so powerful, and it's great because it enables so many capabilities. But to know how to enable those capabilities in a project, you have to go back to the documentation and figure it out. And when you do, I mean, it works for one service, but how do you do it for 100? Once I figure out security, how do I enforce that consistency across all my services?
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So, which is kind of what we want to show you. We have all this configuration. You can configure bindings and behaviors, but that doesn't do anything, right? Mm. How do we go from here to configure the service?
Okay.
So, Let's show some code, because this is a show for developers, right?
Yeah.
We have this project that has some of the services that are hosted in software, and we secure one of the service with dual certificate. So it means that the client has to authenticate to a service with a certificate, the service has to authenticate with a client with a certificate, and all the communication is signed and encrypted with certificate.
Right.
Well, that's a very simple security pattern, but it does require all this configuration.
Yeah.
And it's really hard to manage. So we have this service that is using that configuration, and we have a client that hopefully is invoking that service, and it should return in some results, and the client, it also has a massive amount of configuration here.
Yeah, exactly.
Just to call that service.
Yeah.
That should be working, I believe. Let's see it.
We're sitting on pins and needles here.
You told me if the demo fell, we can try it again. But that's working. That's a traditional WCF scenario. So how do we simplify configuration?
Right.
Everything in software is an all data fit.
Okay.
So configuration is also an all data fit.
Yeah.
Think about this. If I can access my configuration through an HTTP GET, wouldn't it be possible to have something on the server side that just downloads a configuration from the repository and reconfigure the service on the fly?
Yeah.
So if I have 50 servers, I could say, hey, all of you guys are going to use this security profile from now on. It's one checkbox, and it just happens.
That would be awesome.
So what we did, we followed the same pattern Microsoft has implemented with different WCF extensions. We have a custom host that when it wakes up, query software for the configuration of a specific service.
Okay.
Downloads a configuration, merge it together with your configuration file, save a local copy, and reconfigure the service on the fly.
Cool.
So in order to enable that, the only thing you have to do is to use a software, this host factory here, in the same way you would do if you're using data services or RESTful services.
Right.
And we can go from all this, amount of configuration. Can get rid of all this. I can get rid of all this configuration, and my new configuration will look like this. You can tell the host now, indicate, here's my software main service, and I'm interested on the custom, the CRM subservice version 1.0 on the dev environment.
Okay.
And that's absolutely all you need to do. If I browse that service now, all this security information is coming from software. That's a double certificate information. Let me prove to you that this is true. I know you believe me, but
I don't know. I kind of doubt.
Let's see it. Let's change it, and let's go here to the version and say, you know what? I don't want to use security anymore. I'm gonna use basic HTTP.
Okay.
Right. We're gonna save that. And then you have to do something that restarts a host. So what I'm going to do real quick is stop and start that application pool. That doesn't matter. Let me start it. And come here and refresh that whistle. And now all the security information is gone because it's basic HTTP bind.
Right.
I'm going to switch it back for the rest of the demos, but that's how we do it. The service host downloads a configuration from the central place. We don't broker the communication, so you don't have to send a message to software. You're still communicating with the service. We're just centralizing configuration.
Right. So the major points are is that we're not actually hosting your service, right? We're not into hosting services. We host the metadata, the configuration about your service.
Right.
And another thing that Jesus didn't mention was the fact that, let's say that Soulware is offline, and so the service can't actually pull the actual configuration or metadata details for clients to be able to communicate. Not a problem. What we do is we actually download a cached copy for the service to utilize. So in case Soulware is offline, the service can still work because it still has the config file.
Yeah, because I'm sure some people are thinking, wow, that sounds great, but then the repository becomes the weak link.
Exactly.
And then nothing works if the repository's down. And so there are products that have that problem. So this is certainly great that it'll just use the last cached version of the config it had if it can't get to the repository.
And given that it's all RESTful, it's all data, you can scale software in the same way you scale your web apps, right?
Yeah.
It's multiple servers, load balancer, everything works the same. So that was for the service side. What about the client side?
Okay.
So the client side, we believe, is even more dramatic. Because on the service side, we have a service host that downloads a configuration. On the client side, we have a channel factory that is equivalent, makes an HTTP GET, downloads a configuration.
Cool.
And reconfigures the service. So let's look at the code for a second here to show developers how the experience is.
Mm-hmm.
Normally, you will do configure a channel factory, and you will do the same thing. Here is the service that I'm interested on this environment.
Yeah.
And you can also resolve a specific bindings and behaviors for your credentials.
Okay.
All right.
So if you think about it from a developer perspective, normally they go in and they right-click on a C-sharp project, and they go add web reference. And when they go add web reference...
Or a service reference.
Or a service reference, right, it pulls up the... it creates a client proxy.
Right.
Right. And this client proxy behind the scenes creates these channel factories that in turn call the particular service.
Right.
So what we've done is we've created a couple of classes. We've created the configurable proxy factory, and we created a resolver that actually allows you to go out and resolve specific bindings, specific behaviors, or the whole thing, if that's what you're looking for.
And based on some people's feedback, like yourself, we are shipping an example in the next few days that is a Visual Studio plugin that in the same way you can do add service reference, now you're going to be able to add service reference from software.
Awesome.
And you're going to pick your version, and it's going to generate the code that includes that section of the code.
Okay, so it'll be just about as easy then as doing a service reference.
So on the client side, I'm actually going to get rid of the entire configuration section.
Okay. Which just makes my heart happy. Let's just get rid of all that, yeah.
And hopefully it will work. Let's see it. There it is.
There
so
go.
It's picking the entire double certificate configuration, everything from software, and it's invoking the service. So if tomorrow you want to change bindings that they don't require an extra level of configuration, you can go to software and say, everything is going to use WSHTTP binding, and neither clients nor services, they have to do anything. You know, they keep communicating without imposing any configuration changes.
So, you know, what's cool about that is, like, you know, We've all seen people who have built some kind of amazing little, you know, desktop application for a bank or a financial or insurance or something. And now you've got these little bits of app config sprinkled in thousands of computers, and you go, oh, we need to change some setting. And, oh, it's a nightmare. It would be an enormous problem.
Yes.
Trying to get those changes spread out across that organization.
And it's really hard. I mean, we work with some major clients that they're using complex security configuration, using Windows Identity Foundation or technologies like that. And when you go to, you know, 200 services in dev to 200 services in QA, and then it's what's a certificate, what's, I forgot the section of the config file, that has to go on the machine.config. It's hard. Mm-hmm. And even if you get it right, nobody knows what it is. It's not catalog. I mean, if you have to, if that person leave, you have to, at the end, go to that config file and figure out what it's doing. And
it's the
document.
Really, go check your email from 3 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I did to get it working.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
So, we love configuration. Declarative models are a great thing, but a little bit of management doesn't hurt, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. Well, so we are out of time for this episode, but you guys have a lot more.
Absolutely.
So we're going to stick around in the studio, and we're going to come back with another part two, where you're going to show us more about SoAware.
There you go.
Right? I'm getting it. Okay. So we'll see you next time on Endpoint TV.